Chapter 43. They got airborne over the peak of the rise that put the distant Rockies close again, and then Vaughn lifted off the gas and took most of the next mile to coast to a stop. She craned her neck and spent a long minute staring out the back window. They were still deep in despair's territory, but all was quiet behind them. She slumped in her seat and dropped both hands to her lap.
"We need the state police," she said. "We've got mob rule back there, and a missing woman, and whatever exactly Ramirez was to those people, we can't assume they're going to treat his girlfriend kindly."
"We can't assume anything," Reacher said. "We don't know for sure she's there. We don't even know for sure that the dead guy was Ramirez."
"You got serious doubts?"
"The state cops will. It's a fairy tale so far."
"So what do we do?"
"We verify."
"How?"
"We call Denver."
"What's in Denver?"
"The green car, and the guy who was driving it. 300 miles, 6 hours drive time, call it 7 with a stop for lunch. If he left around 8 this morning, he'll be there by now. We'll call him up, ask him if he gave Maria a ride, and if so, where exactly he let her out."
"You know his name?"
"No."
"Number?"
"No."
"Great plan."
"He was visiting 3 grandchildren in Hope. You need to get back to town and check with families that have 3 kids. Ask them if Grandpa just came by in his green Mercury. One of them will say yes. Then you'll get a number for his next stop. It'll be a brother or a sister in Denver with 4 more kids for the old guy to visit."
"What are you going to do?"
"I'm going back to Despair." He got out of the car at 5:35, a little more than 8 miles west of Hope, a little more than 8 miles east of Despair, right in the heart of no man's land. He watched Vaughn drive away, and then he turned and started walking. He stayed on the road itself for speed. He ran calculations in his head. "This is what you know. 2,600 inhabitants, possibly a quarter of them too old or too young to be useful, which left more than 1,800 people with maximum availability after 6 o'clock in the evening, when the plant closed for the day. Newly deputized, newly marshaled, unsure of themselves, inexperienced. Daytime visibility had enabled deployment in large masses. In the dark, they would have to spread out like a human perimeter. But they would want to stick fairly close together for morale and effectiveness and mutual support. Therefore, no outliers and no sentinels. Children would be held close in family groups. Each element of the perimeter would want visual contact with the next, which meant that groups or individuals wouldn't want to be more than maybe 10 feet apart. Some people would have flashlights. Some would have dogs. All in all, worst case, they could assemble a human chain 18,000 feet long, which was 6,000 yards, which was the circumference of a circle, a fraction more than a mile in diameter. A circle, a mile in diameter, would barely enclose the town. It couldn't enclose the town and the plant together, and it would bunch up on the road in and the road out, especially the road in from Hope. Cover would be thin elsewhere, probably very thin. Possibly guys with trucks would be out in the scrub. Possibly the security Tahoes from the plant would be on the prowl. Teenage boys would be unpredictable, excited by the adventure and hungry for glory, but easily bored. In fact, all of them would get bored, and tired, and low. Efficiency would peak during the first hour, would wane over the next 2 or 3, would be poor before midnight, and would be non-existent in the small hours of the night.
"What's your conclusion?"
"Not a huge problem," Reacher thought. The sun was down behind the distant mountains. There was a soft orange glow on the horizon. He walked on toward it. At 7 o'clock, he pictured Vaughn starting her night watch in Hope. At 7:15, he was a mile from where the crowd had gathered before, in despair. It was getting dark. He couldn't see anybody in the distance, and therefore nobody could see him in the distance. He struck off the road into the scrub, south and west, at an angle, hustling, unwilling to slow down. The town ahead was dark and quiet, very quiet. By 7:30, he was 600 yards out in the sand, and he realized he hadn't heard the plane take off. No aero engine, no light in the sky. Why not? He paused in the stillness and put together a couple of possible scenarios. Then he moved on, holding a wide radius, quiet and stealthy and invisible in the darkness. By 8 o'clock, he was making his first approach. He was expected out of the east, therefore he was coming in from the southwest. Not a guarantee of safety, but better than a poke in the eye. Competent individuals would be distributed all around, but not equally. He had already outflanked most of the people he needed to worry about. He had seen one truck, a battered pickup with four lights on a bar on its roof. It had been bouncing slowly along over rough ground, heading away from him. He moved up through the scrub and paused behind a rock. He was 50 yards from the back of a long line of workers' housing. Low, one-story dwellings, well separated laterally because desert land was cheap and septic systems didn't work with too much density. The gaps between the houses were 3 times as wide as the houses themselves. The sky had a minimal gray glow, moon behind cloud. There were guards in the gaps between the houses. Left to right, he could make out an individual, a small group, another individual and another. They all had sticks or clubs or bats. Together they made a chain that went, armed guard, house, armed guard, house, armed guard, house, armed guard. They thought the houses themselves were defensive elements. They were wrong. He could hear dogs barking here and there in the distance, excited and unsettled by the unfamiliar evening activity. Not a problem. Dogs that barked too much were no more use than dogs that didn't bark at all. The guy second from the right between the houses had a flashlight. He was clicking it on at predictable intervals, sweeping an arc of ground in front of him and then clicking it off again to save the battery. Reacher moved left. He lined himself up behind a house that was entirely dark. He dropped to the ground and low-crawled straight for it. The Army record for a 50-yard low-crawl was about 20 seconds. At the other extreme, snipers could spend all day crawling 50 yards into position. On this occasion, Reacher budgeted 5 minutes. Fast enough to get the job done, slow enough to get it done safely. Generally, the human brain noticed speed and discontinuity. A tortoise heading inward worried nobody. A cheetah bounding in got everyone's attention. He kept at it, slow and steady, knees and elbows, head down, no pauses, no stop-start. He made it through 10 yards, then 20, and 30, and 40. After 45 yards, he knew he was no longer visible from the spaces between the houses. The angle was wrong. But he stayed low all the way until he crawled right into the back stoop. He stood up and listened for reaction, either outside the house or inside. Nothing. The stoop was a simple wooden assembly 3 steps high. He went up slowly, feet apart, shuffling, putting his weight where the treads were bolted to the side rails. If a stair squeaked, 99 times in 100 it squeaked in the center, where it was weakest. He put his hand on the door handle and lifted. If a door squeaked, 99 times in 100 it was because it had dropped on its hinges. Upward pressure helped. He eased the door up and in, and stepped through the opening and turned and closed it again. He was in a dark and silent kitchen. A worn linoleum floor, the smell of fried food, counters and cabinets ghostly in the gloom, a sink and a faucet with a bad washer. It released a fat drip every 23 seconds. The drip spattered against a ceramic surface. He pictured the perfect teardrop exploding into a coronet shape, flinging tinier droplets outward in a perfect circle. He moved through the kitchen to the hallway door, smelled dirty carpet and worn furniture from a living room on his right. He moved through the hallway to the front of the house. The front door was a plain, hollow slab with a rectangle of painted beading on it. He turned the handle and lifted, eased it open, silently. There was a screen door beyond it. He stood still. There was no way to open a screen door quietly. No way at all. Lightweight construction, tight plastic hinges, a crude spring mechanism, guaranteed to raise a whole symphony of screeching and slapping sounds. The door had a horizontal bar in the center, designed to add strength and resist warping. The upper void was less than 3 feet square, the lower void the same. Both were meshed with nylon screen. The screen had been doing its job for many years. That was clear. It was filthy with dust and insect corpses. Reacher pulled out one of his captured switchblades, turned back to the hallway to muffle the sound, and popped the blade. He slit a large X in the lower screen, corner to corner, pressed the blade back in the handle, and put the knife back in his pocket, and sat down on the floor, leaned back, and jacked himself off the ground like a crab, shuffled forward, and went out through the X, feet first. Head first would have been more intuitive. The desire to see what was out there was overwhelming. But if what was out there was an axe handle or a bullet, better that it hit him in the legs than the head. Much better. There was nothing out there. No bullet, no axe handle. He ducked and squirmed and got his shoulders through the gap and stood up straight and alert, one swift movement. He was standing on a front stoop made of concrete, a plain slab 4x4, cracked, canted down in one corner on an inadequate foundation. Ahead of him was a short path and a dark street, more houses on the other side. No guards between them. The guards were all behind him now, by a distance equal to half a house's depth. And they were all facing the wrong way.